one towards the near corner. Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas. Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome in to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show here on a Monday that's seen the Golden Knights rip off 5 straight victories. They head into battle tomorrow night against the Dallas Stars. Clayton Hamilton here, and so happy that Frank Harnisch is back and joining us. Welcome, Frank.
Yeah, it's good to be back, and good to see the Golden Knights on their second 5-game winning streak of the season.
Yeah, they are on fire. Also joined by Ryan, the hockey guy, Wallace. Three of us just back from T-Mobile Arena, where the fellas held practice today, took a team photo as well.
Yeah. It's the second 5-game win streak they've had this year. You want to know the last time the Buffalo Sabres had a 5-game win streak? 2012.
Wow.
That's a long time.
That is a crazy long time. But every time you think perhaps this organization has turned a corner, or maybe things aren't going to go so well. We saw those back-to-back games in New York where things went south for a little bit. Then we saw the clunker in Edmonton. They've bounced back each and every time.
Yeah, and you know, the Edmonton game, obviously, that was an anomaly. It's, some people were saying, oh, here we go, now there's the real Golden Knights. No, the real Golden Knights are the team that we've seen the majority of this season. People can't say they're sneaking up on people anymore and that people are looking past them because they're expansion team or anything else. It's time to start giving these guys the props. They're a pretty darn good hockey team out there. They believe in each other. They've been playing well together, and they're not just winning at home anymore. Now they're finding ways to win on the road as well, and if they can continue to do that, well, we could see the first expansion team in many, many a year to, dare I say it, contend for a playoff spot.
Well, they certainly have done what they need to do traditionally by being in a playoff spot by American Thanksgiving. We've seen how that's worked out 75% to 78% of the time, Ryan. A lot of national guys are saying, yeah, but they're going to be the one that drops out. Them in New Jersey, still smoke and mirrors, still a mirage, still do not believe.
Okay. It's easy to not believe, because if you're right, then you saw it the entire time. If you were wrong, well, I got it wrong. But here's the difference. The Golden Knights aren't just in a playoff spot. They're leading the Pacific Division, okay? And they're doing it on the heels of timely goal scoring, pretty good goaltending, and then when they're winning games they should be winning, it's an all-out team effort. And that's what you get with this team. You get 60 minutes of effort every single night. Doesn't matter if they're losing 5-1 or if they're up 5-0, they give you everything that they have. And that's what's difficult for teams to match.
And the other thing that this team has going for it is you not only have the effort every night, but you have it from all 4 lines. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about it before, and some people say it kind of tongue-in-cheek when Gerard Gallant says he doesn't recognize lines, he doesn't have a first, second, third, fourth. Well, we know that he does. Every team does. But on this team here, regardless of what line you're on, everybody plays hard. And if the guy wasn't in the lineup and he gets put in the lineup, he plays hard. They're playing hard. They're believing in each other. They're doing everything. And maybe part of that is because they did have that chip on their shoulder coming in, because let's face it, these guys were known as a ragtag bunch, the castoffs, the guys that other teams didn't protect. Well, they're all out there with something to prove, and they're all doing their best to prove it. Look at a guy like William Carlson. He's got 13 goals. He's 2 goals away from adding up his total from the last 2 seasons combined, when he played pretty much full seasons.
Yeah, and one of the things you can't discount with this team is what we knew all along going into the season. They probably weren't going to be able to match the top line of any other team in the league. And that's true. It's still not close, but lines 2 through 4 are as good, if not better, than every other NHL team. Lines 3 and 4 specifically. Every single night the Golden Knights win the 3-4 battle, they win the game. because that forces the opposition to play their top two lines more than they're comfortable with. It wears down those players. They can't make as many good plays in the offensive zone. When they're forced to defend, you're not going to win hockey games. And that's how they do it, by having great depth all the way through those four lines.
And they had been sort of forced to have that second, third, and fourth line carry them, but not even so much anymore. When you look at that top line and that production by Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, and Riley Smith, they are beating the other team's first lines as well, which is what contributes to these long streaks.
And it's because they're on the right side of the puck. And we talked to Gerard Gallant today. We talked about Jonathan Marchessault and how he's been able to be such a dominant player the last three or four games on the score sheet. And he made mention it happens because he's a dominant player 200 feet. He gets on the right side of the puck. He makes the right reads. We talked about it that day that he made that play coming out of the penalty box to break up Brock Besser's sure goal in the Canucks game. That was the moment where you saw the effort from Jonathan Marchessault away from the puck. Not so much when he's in scoring opportunities, scoring chances. It's what he does away from the puck that opens him up and allows him to score goals, get assists, do everything that he does that's fancy that we like to read too much into.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting too, because if you remember way back to the start of the season, when they won those first two games on the road, then they came home and people are saying, okay, well, they're winning because Marc-Andre Fleury has been playing out of his mind and James Neal has gotten game winners for him. Then Andre Fleury goes down with an injury. Neal's been banged up a little bit here and there. He's certainly not scoring at the rate that he was. But that kind of catapulted things and got him out of the blocks to a quick start. But now everybody else on that team is chipping in. And obviously it's not Marc-Andre Fleury anymore. It's goalie by committee, who's ever been called next man up. They've been doing it. James Neal's still playing hard and he's contributing a lot. But now everybody else is contributing as well. Whether it's Karlsson, Marchessault, whoever out there. This is truly a team. And I know that they say hockey is a team sport, and it certainly it is. But when you talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, people talk about Crosby and Malkin. Well, they've won Stanley Cups because the other guys fill their roles and do things as well. And that's what they're doing. And I'm not saying that this team is the Pittsburgh Penguins, but this is a team where every single guy in that lineup gives 100% effort, and they don't sit around and pout if they're not in the lineup, because they're waiting for their opportunity. And when they get it, for the most part, they're making the most of it.
And to that point, you see a team that's scoring a little over 3.5 goals per game. No players in the top 50 in the NHL when it comes to points.
No, but you're getting really, really good production up and down your lineup. You're getting it from Belmer. You're getting it from Noshik. You're getting it from guys that you wouldn't necessarily think would be chipping in, and on other teams probably wouldn't, because instead of playing 6 or 7 minutes a night, now they're playing 11, 12 minutes a night, and that 5 minutes of ice time is going to make them better. It's going to put them in better chance. It's going to give them a better chance to score goals, which is why we see Pierre-Édouard Belmer right now with 3 goals when he had 4 all last year.
And you know, it's interesting too, you mentioned a guy like Belmer, and you look at him, and if you watch the highlights, when he's gotten goals, the team knuckle bashes with him and high fives like they do on every team. But he's got the most applause from his team, his teammates, and the people in the crowd when he's blocking shots and doing the other things out there. So these guys, they don't have a bunch of prima donnas out there or, all right, we're just not going to let this guy beat us. Because if a team comes in and says, we're not going to let James Neal beat us, well, Jonathan Marchessault might beat him. If they say we're going to stop Marshy from doing it, then William Karlsson comes up. It's truly who's the hero of the night. And they don't care. They're not looking like, oh, I have to have the headlines or whatever. They want to go out, and at the bottom line is they want to get the W. We were in the press conference today. They've won their last couple of games, and they haven't been necessarily happy with their performance.
No, and they certainly haven't really looked right since David Perron got hurt. And I'm talking about in the San Jose game after that happened, and then obviously the last game against the Phoenix Coyotes. They found a way to win, but they weren't happy with the effort.
And to the point of David Perron and his injury, we have talked about the depth of this team. That depth is about to be challenged yet again. We've seen it in terms of the goaltenders. We've seen it in terms of losing Lucas Spezza, who was back out on the ice today, was in a non-contact red jersey. Not sure if he will be available tomorrow or not. He was skating as a forward during practice because of all of the injuries, David Perron being one of them, that's caused some movement. So without without Perron, we've seen two things happen, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Yep. We saw Brendan Leipzig jump up on the second line for the majority of the San Jose game.
Yep.
And then we saw in the Arizona game, Oscar Lindberg go to the second line, Brendan Leipzig remain on that third line, mm-hmm. and a reuniting of Carrier and Nosek and Bellemare on the fourth line. What did you see at practice today that leads you to believe that you know what the plan might be tomorrow?
Brendan Leipzig was skating with Haula and Neal, and Lindberg was skating with Bellemare and Spezza. So I assume if everything stays the way that it did today, tomorrow, that Leipzig will be getting a shot on that second line. However, the thing you've got to understand about that is what generates offense for Alex Tuck. And we've seen in spades, Brendan Leipzig generates offense for Alex Tuck. Now, Nosek was skating with Tuck and Eakin today, so I think I might be okay with giving Nosek a try on that third line, see what he can do, see if he can spark something with Alex Tuck similar to the way that Brendan Leipzig does. But we've talked about opportunity. If Leipzig is going to get a shot with Neal and Haula, it's the biggest opportunity of his career to this point. It really is. And it's going to be up to him to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and again, the bottom line is we can speculate everything we want to, and we can say what we saw at practice today and this, that, and the other. Gerard Gallant has said it over and over again. He'll make those decisions on game day. He's going to put the people out there. Sometimes it might not make sense to us or whatever, but he's going to do what his gut tells him, and as he likes to say over and over and over again, what his assistant coaches tell him is the best pairing and the best thing for that day. They work on a lot of different things, and they work with a lot of different combinations because injuries are part of this game, like they are in every sport, but in hockey, they're really out there. And sometimes you need to mix things up to get a little spark or change some things out there. But I agree with Ryan. If he gets this opportunity, this would be a huge opportunity for his potentially the rest of his career down the road.
And it's why I didn't even ask Gerard Gallant about it today. I'll ask him tomorrow if that's the same pairing or the same line that's on the ice during the morning skate, but I wasn't going to ask him today because he's probably taking a look. He wants to see whose practice habits are going to be better between Leipzig and Lindberg and see where the chemistry goes. You could see the chemistry between Carlson, Smith, and Marchessault out there. You can see the chemistry between Leipzig and Tuck. You can see the chemistry between a number of different players and why they work so well together. He's trying to find out if there's any chemistry there, and he's trying to do it in practice. It's a little bit more difficult than in a game, but I don't want to ask Gerard Gallant that question until I know for certain that Leipzig's going to get that opportunity, and then I want to know why he thinks Leipzig over Lindberg.
We did see Spezza out there today. First time we've seen him on the ice in quite some time. Was skating as a forward today. Perhaps that was just out of necessity. Will Carrier, we were told, was not skating as a scheduled normal maintenance day. He was a little bit dinged up, but they expect, we would think, that he would be back tomorrow. If not, a move could be made to Chicago, so we may see somebody else come in. But one of the things that we've noticed about Gerard Gallant is that he's not married to the decisions that he makes at the beginning of the game. And if things don't go well with Leipzig, perhaps on the second line, he wouldn't be afraid to flip things around.
No, not at all. I mean, Gerard Gallant is a very good hockey coach. He's able to make in-game adjustments as needed. We saw perhaps the best example of that in that Toronto game where he moved away from the McNabb-Englund pairing and put Shea Theodore with Derek Englund, and that seemed to really jumpstart the offense. But, you know, that's what he's paid to do. He's paid to read the temperature of the game and figure out what needs to change on his end, and then he goes about doing it. But, you know, Brendan Leipzig is going to be one of those players where you are always questioning what it is that he does really well. And how can he be better? And it's always going to be for him away from the puck. He needs to be better away from the puck in much the same way that Jonathan Marchessault has gotten better away from the puck, battling, competing, winning those board battles, those 50-50 pucks. And he's done a lot of that in the last couple of games that he's played. So, you know, it might not be on the score sheet that Brendan Leipzig affects the game, but if he can continue to win those battles and get better defensively, that's all the coaching staff is looking for.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because we talk about this team being guys thrown together with a chip on their shoulder. Well, so is Coach Gerard Gallant. Mm-hmm. A couple years ago, he was one of the top coaches in the running for Coach of the Year. Then what happens down in Florida, they literally fire him in a parking lot. The bus is off there, and he's standing there with some of the media people out there. Now he's being talked about as coach of the year again. And I know it's very early in the season, but people are already throwing him in there as a leading candidate for coach of the year. So he's also making the most of his opportunity here, and he's doing it the way that he knows how to do it. He's not afraid to make changes. He's also not some egomaniac that's going, I'm going to make every decision. He talks to Dave Pryor. He talks to the other coaches. He gets the input. He goes by his gut. He's not afraid to make a mistake, because when it's all said and done, and he told us this before the season started, George makes the team, I coach the team. His job is to win games, and up to this point, he's been doing a pretty darn good job of it.
And I want to piggyback off of what you said. This coach and his team, they're an extension of him.
Yep.
When you look at the Dallas Stars coming in, they are not an extension of Ken Hitchcock. Ken Hitchcock is a very good defensive hockey coach. The Dallas Stars, top to bottom, are very good elite offensive hockey players. So it's you're seeing this juxtaposition of a team that's really good at one thing, and you bring in a coach that's really good at what they're bad at, and you try to figure out a way to transition them from really good offensive players and okay defensively to more of the middle. It's not happening with the Golden Knights. The Golden Knights on the ice are the physical embodiment of Gerard Gallant, how he used to play the game and how he wants to coach the game. And when all that's happening synergistically, there's no questions as to what you're supposed to be doing out there. Everybody knows exactly what's expected of them. That's on Gerard Gallant having this team well prepared, but also on George McPhee for picking these guys that he knew would be guys that Gerard Gallant would respect and would want to coach and would want to make better.
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, your home for Golden Knights hockey in Las Vegas. Clayton Hamilton along with Frank Harnish and Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace talking all things Golden Knights. And a fellow that has been the most beneficiary of the Gerard Gallant system of working hard, which creates offensive opportunities, Jonathan Marchessault has been as hot as anybody, and NHL.com has just named him the number one star of the week. He's got a goal and two assists in each of his three games this week.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, like I said, when you take care of the puck and when you're doing what you need to do on the defensive side, the offense will come, and that's what's happened for Jonathan.
And Jonathan Marchessault said, certainly carrying the offensive load and looking forward to another shot at Dallas. Lots more to get to. John Merrill has just walked into the studio, so we're going to have a little one-on-one with our own defenseman here of the Golden Knights just after the commercial break. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back in. A little of Michigan, Hail to the Victor, and a little bit of a better song, Hang on Sloopy, from the Ohio State University. Good times, the big game this weekend. Clayton Hamilton and Frank Harnish here, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, and we had to play that because our guest today from the Fighting Wolverines himself, John Merrill of your Vegas Golden Knights. Welcome in, John.
Thank you very much for having me, guys.
Thanks for still coming. After what happened Saturday at the big house.
Yeah, I've been licking my wounds a little bit here, but yeah, that was a tough game. Jumped out to an early lead and things were looking promising, and then it was all Ohio State from the second quarter on.
Yeah, and usually I always say that Michigan has the ugliest helmets in the history of college football, but I don't know what was going on with Ohio State, Frank, with their alternate helmet. I don't like it.
I didn't mind the helmet. I wasn't crazy about the uniform. Just the black and white uniform seemed kind of boring to me. It's like, wait a second, you're the Scarlet and Gray, and you have no Scarlet on you anywhere. Yeah. I didn't necessarily see that. And it looked like the team didn't know who they were playing for either, with negative 6 yards after that first quarter. But then they eventually woke up and got the job done there. But I'm just wondering, at what point are the Wolverine faithful going to be turning on Mr. Harbaugh, because he still has not beat Urban Meyer and the Ohio State Buckeyes?
Yeah, there is. That is a big question to answer. And we're going to dive into a lot of college football with John Merrill of the Golden Knights, because he is a huge college football fan. But real quick, if you would like to go and see John and the rest of the boys play tomorrow night, we do have tickets to give away for the Dallas game. We're going to go ahead and do that right now. Puck drop is at 7 o'clock tomorrow at T-Mobile Arena. So if you would like to go, in honor of John Merrill number 15, we will take caller number 15, your opportunity to go and see the boys play. 702-876-1340. That's the number, 702-876-1340. So, John, you are a proud Wolverine, a member of the hockey team, got to play in the Big Ten. What was that like?
Well, actually, the Big Ten formed the year after I left. So I was in the CCHA. But it is great to see Big Ten hockey. I know they added Notre Dame to the Big Ten hockey now, so it's just growing. And it'd be great to see another one of the Big Ten schools add Division I hockey too.
Yeah, Division I hockey has gotten a lot bigger. And how do you make that decision as an athlete going in to go? Do I go the juniors route? Do I go the college route? Do I go straight to the pros?
It was a pretty easy decision for me. I'm a Michigan guy, raised in Michigan. So when I had an opportunity to play for the University of Michigan in hockey, it was such an easy decision for me.
Now, when it comes to Michigan and the Big Ten in hockey, the Big Ten seems like they're kind of getting a little bit better every year, getting a little bit recognition in that. How do you assess that conference as far as hockey goes? Because a lot of times when people think about hockey, they think of the East Coast teams or maybe somebody like North Dakota or something like that. But the Big Ten hasn't always been that highly thought of when it comes to college hockey.
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously you got Michigan and Michigan State have been good in the past.
Wisconsin was good many years
Wisconsin,
ago.
Wisconsin, Minnesota, obviously. So there's some big time programs in the Big Ten, and it's great to see a school like Penn State. They're a really young team. I think 6 years now they've been a Division I team, and they're won the Big Ten last year and putting a lot of good players into pro. And so, like I said, I'd love to see, maybe in Illinois or somewhere like that add a team as well. That'd be great for the conference.
And Illinois looks like they definitely have a big shot to add a team, because supposedly, just like UNLV works alongside the Vegas Golden Knights out here at the City National Arena, supposedly the Blackhawks are going to help Illinois out and get them some funding in that and help get their program spearheaded.
That'd be great. I mean, the state of Illinois is a hockey state. The Hawks have a great fan base, and I think that the entire state would rally around a Division I hockey team.
Now, we've seen a growth of outdoor games at the NHL level, and they've had a few in Michigan State. Were you there when they played in the Big House?
I was, yeah. I was my freshman year, and I was fortunate enough to score 2 goals in that game, actually.
Nice.
Yeah, we had a big 5-0 win against Michigan State, and that was a day I'll never forget.
When you're out there playing an outdoor game like that, does it kind of bring you back to your youth and your childhood when you're playing in the lakes and the ponds and different things like that, and the snow might be falling down and the wind's blowing? Because I think it's funny, because sometimes I watch some of those games and I'm thinking, like, they need to have a different stat for the outdoor games, because there's literally wind-assisted goals sometimes when a guy's on a breakaway and all of a sudden the defensemen are skating backwards and this guy flies by because there's a 15-mile-an-hour wind that's pushing him along.
Yeah, definitely. There's some elements that you're not used to playing indoors. But, yeah, it takes you right back to when you're a kid playing. And just remember back to that game. We were able to practice there all week leading up to the game, and they couldn't get us off the ice after practice. The boys just wanted to, stay out there and mess around. And just being outdoors, wind in your face, playing hockey, that's how most of us grew up, learning how to play and falling in love with the game. So it's definitely special.
Is that the biggest crowd you've ever played in front of?
Yeah, definitely. I think we had 113,000, something like
for
that.
For a hockey game.
For a hockey game,
that's
yeah.
crazy.
A college hockey game at that, yeah.
Yeah, what's it like being in the Big House? We see it on college football Saturdays and sort of the football team running out, and they got the banner to jump onto, which is one of the great college football traditions. But what's it like to just go into that building and know all of the things that have happened in there?
It's really cool. Every time that you're inside the big house, you get chills, you get goosebumps. It's such a unique and incredible stadium, just a one big deep bowl. You don't see that too often, you know. And so the way they pack people in on those benches and the energy in the crowd and the student section, it's so much fun.
Yeah, it looks like it. And like I said, I'm a born and raised in Columbus, diehard Ohio State fan, but I don't have that disdain for Michigan. It's like it's that really healthy respect, because when I grew up, that was during the years that Jim Harbaugh was quarterback, and they would just maul Ohio State every year, and they would ruin John Cooper's perfect season.
Yeah, every year John Cooper was coming in there undefeated or something like that. But the one thing he couldn't do was beat Michigan, so he had to go.
Yeah. It's unfortunate the tides have turned the other way now, but
they certainly have turned, and let's get into that a little bit, because Jim Harbaugh came in, returns home, quarterback there at Michigan. Now he's the head football coach, and he's the savior. And thus far, he's had about the same record as Brady Hoke.
Yeah, it's surprising. I think he's done a lot of good things, obviously. And I'm not there every day, but it seems that they've instilled. A little bit of that winning culture, got that Michigan swagger back a little bit. Unfortunately, they haven't been able to pull out some of those big wins, the Ohio States, a couple losses to Michigan State that hurt. But, you know, hopefully that the culture just continues to grow and grow, and the recruiting classes that Jim Harbaugh brings in start to shine.
When it comes to a team like Michigan, obviously you want to beat Ohio State. Is it more important to the fan base in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, to beat Ohio State? Or if that's the only game they lose, would they still be fine with that? Because, like we just said, literally at Ohio State, when John Cooper couldn't beat Michigan, it didn't matter that he won every other game. He was still out the door.
Yeah, I think winning that game is everything. You walk around the weight room that the football team works out and everything's beat Ohio. They have a clock that's ticking down by the second until they play Ohio State. And that's the biggest game, you know, on campus all year long.
Does that go with all the other sports too? I mean, obviously the basketball team plays a couple times a year, and they might play again in the conference tournament, maybe even in the NCAA tournament. But is it the same way on the hockey team and everything else out there as well? Is the Ohio State game still the big game, or in hockey, because Wisconsin or Minnesota might be a better team, is that a bigger game for you?
I would say for hockey, Ohio State, you definitely want to beat Ohio State. It's just fun to beat them and kind of have an edge as a Michigan player. But definitely some other rivalries have gotten bigger in hockey. I think the Michigan State-Michigan hockey rivalry is probably the biggest one. But yeah, anytime you can beat Ohio State is fun.
I know that that the wrestling rivalry has gotten pretty big as well. You know, as you look in the Big Ten, the Penn State's always been pretty good, and so has Iowa. But that Ohio State-Michigan duel, both in track and in wrestling, has taken a life of its own. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, along with your Vegas Golden Knights own John Merrill, joining us in studio today, talking a little college sports, a little bit about his life. Now, you're an interesting cat in that you're from Oklahoma, and you went to Michigan, and then you started your career in New Jersey. So about three as different places as you could possibly be, and then you end up here in Las Vegas, which is different than them all. What's it been like to sort of tour the country and live in different places?
Yeah, so I was born in Oklahoma. My dad was in the Air Force, and he was stationed there at Tinker Air Force Base just outside Oklahoma City. So I was born there. I lived there about 3 years, and then both of my parents are from a small town outside Flint, Michigan. So when my dad's service was done, we moved back there, and I spent all of my childhood in Michigan. As you said, went to the University of Michigan and then drafted by New Jersey Devils. Spent the past 4 years in the greater New York City area, and now here in Vegas. So yeah, it's been so much fun just to see where the game of hockey has taken me in my life, and it's been a lot of fun.
Now, living in New Jersey, you have to answer the question that everyone who lives in New Jersey has to answer. What exit?
I lived right on the river in Jersey City, so I was take the turnpike as far as you can. You run right into the Holland Tunnel, and there I was.
All right.
All right, so to say that you're from Oklahoma, you mentioned that you spent about 3 years there. If your dad hadn't been reassigned or you guys hadn't moved to Flint, Would you have picked up a glove and a bat and become a baseball player or a football player or something else? And maybe hockey wouldn't have been the sport? Because I have a feeling hockey's not the number one sport in Oklahoma.
No, it definitely isn't. And you never know what would have happened. So like they say, everything happens for a reason. And I'm sure fortunate that I was raised in Michigan, which is a hockey hotbed, and was able to develop my skills in hockey and, you know, have a career out of it.
We look at the Golden Knights and you look at the New Jersey Devils, probably the two best stories in the NHL this year. Do you keep in contact with any of those guys back in Jersey and what's going on with them?
Yeah, you know, shared a few text messages with some former teammates and stuff. And yeah, they're really excited about their early success as well. And they're obviously texting me, asking questions about what we got going on over here, because as you said, it's pretty cool to see the early success that we've had as well.
When it comes to the success that the Vegas Golden Knights have had, we've heard so many different people saying, oh, they're winning with smoke and mirrors. It's the Vegas flu. People are looking past them because they're an expansion team. At what point does people, the media, the NHL in general, and other teams start admitting that this might just be a pretty darn good hockey team?
I think that I'm not sure when the media will get over all that, but I know around the league it seems as though you know, teams are, I don't want to say afraid to play us, but we're playing so hot right now, and we've got some guys who are scoring everything, you know. So I think around the league, we're definitely gaining some respect. And
you're not sneaking up on teams
anymore.
No,
I don't think so.
No, I don't either.
When you guys are at practice or you're away from public view or the media view, we only get a sample of you guys, and we only get a sample of Coach. Coach comes out to the press conference, and he gives you the oh shucks, golly gee whiz, we just want to work hard and that's who we are. And we'll ask him about stuff and he'll say, you know, I don't talk to injured players, I don't talk to goalies, I don't talk to guys, I don't talk to my he doesn't talk to anybody is what he tells us. I know he does. I know he's lying to us. I know he talks to people. What is he like privately away from the cameras and the reporters and the sound bites and the mics?
He's probably pretty similar to what he gives you guys. You know, he was such a great player. I remember watching him with the Red Wings and, you know, just a blue collar player, meat and potatoes kind of guy. And I think he coaches the same way. He's, a player's coach and, he loves his players and we love him as a coach. And, he doesn't even have to say much. We've got such a great group of leadership in our locker room. We've got a good mix of old and young, and we're all having so much fun right now that not much really needs to be said.
Some coaches seem like when they coach that they're the authority figure. It's my way or the highway. You're going to do everything and everybody stands in line. It seems like Coach Gerard Gallant believes in his assistant coaches. He trusts them to do their job, that he's okay. His ego's in check, that if they tell me that they think this guy should be the one playing, or if they think that, you know, he says it all the time when it comes to Dave Pryor, the goalie coach. I don't know nothing about goaltending. I talked to the coach about it and this and that. Is he a little bit better than some other coaches that you've seen with not being afraid to distribute the wealth in that and trust in the other coaches? Because that seems to be one of the keys to this team's success.
Yeah, definitely. I think we all trust each other. It's such a great group of coaches, players, staff, everybody from top to bottom. It's just a really good group of people. And I think when they were picking this team, I've heard George talk about it a few times, that they wanted to pick quality people first and foremost. And I think that they've done a great job at that. There's not a bad apple in this organization right now. And I think that goes a long way.
And when we see you at practice, you probably have the most different experience than any of the other defensemen, because we see you paired with everybody. Pretty much everyone else, again, you know, they got their partner and that's who they go. But we've seen you in games. We never know who you're going to be paired with. We never know who you're going to be paired with in practice. What has that been like to have to learn the whole defensive roster and all of their tendencies?
You know, it's been somewhat of a challenging year for me, being in and out of the lineup. And so I think you just have to be a good pro and show up every day and do what's asked of you and just work hard and try and be a good teammate to your teammates. And like you said, it's not easy to play with a lot of different guys or get mixed in and out. But like I said, you got to be a good pro and do what you can.
Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show here. Frank Harnish, Clayton Hamilton, along with John Merrill from the Vegas Golden Knights. When it comes to that and being a good teammate, and it seems like this team has gelled and the chemistry came together quicker than almost anybody could have imagined that it would have, we know that there's not a captain on this team. Nobody's got a C. There's certain guys that have an A, and they kind of alternate a little bit. But who are some of the leaders on this team that have really showed up? It seems like Derek Englund right off the bat took it there. And I know there's different ways of being leaders, but in some way, is everybody kind of a leader? Because you're all basically banding together saying, look, we're in this together. Let's fight together.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely the older guys, like you said, Derek Englund, you know, James Neal, Fleury, Perron. Those guys are driving the bus a little bit. But as you look at our point totals, it's pretty spread out. Everyone's contributing. Everyone's chipping in. And so, you know, there's not one guy that's more important than the next. And I think that's really important with a team, is we all understand that we all have a role. And as long as we do our jobs, the team has success.
Who on the team, who is the foodie? Who is the guy that drives the restaurant choice when you're on the road?
Well, I would say Belly is pretty cultured. He's he's very a sophisticated man. He understands
food. Do you know that
he speaks
Swedish?
I do know that, yes. I believe his wife is Swedish.
Okay.
He played there for some time in Sweden, so... Yeah, he speaks Swedish, French, and English, as far as I know. There might be another one in there, but...
Now, you said he's got a sophisticated palate. Are you a sophisticated kind of guy, or are you like a burger and fries kind of guy or something?
I can go both ways. Yeah. I can have
you're
a
burger. You're the chameleon. You can just adapt to whatever surrounding it, what it calls for.
Exactly, exactly.
Who drives the music choice on the bus or the plane or the locker room?
That would be actually our massage therapist, Raul, is in charge of the music. Post-game, pre-game.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. How does he do?
He does a good job. The boys are happy.
Okay. All right. Who is the fashionista? Who is the best dressed Golden Knight?
Got to be James Neal.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's got pretty good style. Yeah, you got to catch a glimpse of him on his way into a game one night.
When's James going to get the grill fixed? He's been fighting that for like weeks.
Yeah, I don't know if he's planning on it or what, but it's pretty hot right now, so I think he's just sticking to what's working.
All right. Who's got the most ostentatious car?
You're going to have to describe that word to me a little bit further.
like the fanciest car, like the most expensive car, like the guy that's, you know, got the tricked out Pimp My Ride.
You got to go with James Neal. I think he's got a pretty nice Ferrari going right now. Perron's got a Tesla, so I really like those. Might be there.
I want to just backtrack a little bit here when we were talking about the different things in that, and you were talking about the food and the palate and different things like that. Who decides who all these people are? Does somebody just spear hunt, or does somebody say, hey, look, we're going out to eat tonight, and I know a place in this restaurant or this area or something like that? Or does it just kind of go in different cities? Does it kind of alternate a little bit here and there?
Yeah, you know, as you are in the league a little bit longer, obviously you go to those cities at least once a year. And so if you've been to a good restaurant in those cities, you kind of say, hey, guys, I've got a good place. Anybody wants to join me for dinner? And usually we go in groups of anywhere from 4 to 6 guys and kind of split up that way, and guys do different things.
All right, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. John Merrill in studio with us today. When we come back, we are going to get his pick for college football national champion as well as Heisman Trophy. He does more than just the hockey. He's a college football aficionado, and we're going to give it to you on the other side of the break. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton and Frank Harnish here with you on a Monday with our special guest, John Merrill of your Golden Knights in studio today. Hockey player, foodie sometimes, about half the time, New Jersey resident for part of his life, proud Michigan Wolverine, college football fan. And now we got to get your decision, your choice, the final college football rankings. Before the championship games coming out tomorrow night, who are your top four college football teams?
I got to go with Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay.
Oklahoma. And Auburn.
Now, what should happen should Auburn lose to Georgia in the championship game?
I think Georgia should play for a chance at a national title, but it all depends on if Wisconsin loses to Ohio State or not. because I think if Wisconsin loses to Ohio State, then you have to go with two SEC teams and no Big Ten teams.
And is there anything, Frank, in this world that is worse than two SEC teams in the championship Final Four?
I don't think there's necessarily that it's the worst thing that could happen, because in a weird kind of way, if Ohio State and Alabama both did not make the Final Four, you are going to hear two of the biggest powerhouses as far as their fan bases and everything else screaming to expand this thing to eight teams, because those two teams just automatically assume that they're going to be there every year. So it wouldn't kill me if one or even both of them weren't there. As a matter of fact, for that reason alone, I'd almost like to see it.
Is it time, John, to go to eight or six? Every conference champion plus, you know, the best of the non-powers or an independent like Notre Dame, or is it, or just flat out eight?
I like the idea of conference champions, as and then adding in, like you said, a Notre Dame or a smaller conference champion as well, because I think there's just not as much onus on those conference championships. Whereas I think if you win your conference, you should have a chance to play on. Your season should not be over. Not that it's over, but you should have a chance to play for a national title.
And that's why I like the idea of eight, because I think all five conference champions should go. And then if you have two from the SEC that are deserving, or two from the Big Ten or Pac-12 or whatever it is, then you could do that. If you have three wild cards, you'd have a little bit more wiggle room. You could still get a Mountain West team in there if you really wanted one, but still give the other teams that, let's face it, Ohio State didn't play in their conference championship game last year and then made it into the thing.
Yeah,
that could happen to Alabama this year.
Yeah, yeah. Like a team this year, like Central Florida, who could go undefeated in the American Athletic Conference, and then they would get a shot to play too. Like, why shouldn't they have an opportunity? John, one of the things they always say is that it's too many games for a collegiate athlete. You're a collegiate athlete. Is there such thing as too many games?
No, I think that if you were to ask the athletes, they would be so excited to play more games. You know, that's what we love to do is play. And I definitely think the athletes would not be opposed to playing an extra game or two.
All right, real quick, Heisman Trophy goes out this Saturday. Who is your Heisman Trophy winner?
Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield. All he does is grab himself Baker Mayfield. From Oklahoma, is that a bit of a homer pick, or do you really
It's
love
not. I think, you know, he's got his team in a good position to play for a national title. He's been the best player in the country this year.
Frank?
I think it's Baker Mayfield, and then I'm curious to see if he can do anything in the NFL, because we've seen Heisman Trophy winners before that have not exactly excelled.
Gino Toretta come to mind? Is that what you're thinking?
Several do. Several do.
I hear you. All right. Well, thank you, John Merrill, for coming in to join us. For Frank Harnish, for Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Chris Chapman behind the board. This has been Clayton Hamilton. You've been listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Thanks for joining us. Stick around. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next.